Thank you for tuning in to the WOLA podcast, Latin America Today. It's Tuesday, August 14th, 2012, though we'll be posting this one a few days from now. I'm Adam Isaacson, a senior associate for regional security policy here at WOLA, and I'm here with Alejandro Anaya Munoz. Alejandro is a professor at CIDE, the Centro de Investigación y Docencia Económica in Mexico, and he's the academic coordinator at CIDE's new campus in Aguascalientes. Welcome, Alejandro.
Thank you, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm glad you were able to join us. Alejandro is spending his summer here in Washington at the Woodrow Wilson Center for International Scholars, where he's a public policy scholar in the Mexico Institute. Now, Alejandro, your focus this summer is international relations and human rights with particular regard to Mexico, correct?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, basically, international relations scholars have been recently addressing the issue of human rights within their research agenda. This is quite a new trend, and even more so in Mexican academia, in which international relations scholars generally do not take a lot of interest in human rights issues.
Right.
But recently there's a group of us who are focusing on human rights from an international relations perspective, and that's what I'm doing here, doing some work on the international interactions or the interactions between Mexico and international interlocutors, international critics around the human rights situation in the country.
Are international critics or observers or institutions on human rights really having an impact on the human rights situation inside Mexico?
Well, that's kind of the main question of the literature anyway.
Sure.
I mean, the question is if all this transnational activism by all these different kind of actors at the end of the day have an impact on state behavior, not only in Mexico, but in any other case. And the kind of the consensus that the literature is reaching now, including in my own research in the case of Mexico, is that what international activism really manages to do is to make a very important contribution into changing or reshaping the rules of the game, the rules of state-society relations within the country, because the more visible, the more tangible outcome of international activism are responses from the governments in terms of showing commitment with human rights norms. Mm-hmm. So basically what they do when they are put under pressure by international actors is that they reform their local laws, they ratify new treaties, they establish new institutions for the promotion of human rights within the country, they maybe design public policy plans, big national plans of human rights to have human rights orientation in public policy in general. So they do all this kind of stuff. At the same time, however, they continue to violate human rights.
Yeah, I mean, that was my question. I mean, the first question that comes to mind when you say this, I mean, obviously it's positive to see this being studied from an international relations perspective. So much of international relations has been the study of power or economic relations, and this is, we're talking about norms here. Certainly, I think that international pressure has changed the discourse and a lot of, as you say, the rules of the game as they're written, but are those rules then followed? In Mexico, the case of Mexico, for instance, one's impression may be that what we have seen in the last 6 years is a Calderón government increasing the military role in internal security, while human rights protections have suffered and there's a big debate over military and civilian jurisdiction. Is it having an impact in the behavior?
Yeah. Well, then it depends. Then the ball is in the game of the local actors, local advocates of human rights. So basically what happens at the end of the day, it's a purely internal political process in which governments interact with civil society. And at the end of the day, it depends on the local civil society and even depends on the government, because sometimes within governments you have a kind of pro-human rights sectors or individuals. So it depends on the local configuration of politics if the new rules of the game are implemented or not. So there's only so much that we can expect from international pressures and international criticisms. But at the end of the day, the real changes will come from domestic politics, domestic processes.
international situation can create more space, though, for those who are trying to reform on human rights inside the country.
Yeah, it creates new opportunities for litigation of cases. It creates new and improved opportunities for social mobilization as well. So it sets rules that are more favorable for human rights activism domestically.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So that, for example, taking us back to the case, to the specific case of Mexico, international processes have been an important source of change in domestic legislation and in domestic institutions, and that has been good for local advocates. So,
An example would be, say, the 2009 Inter-American Human Rights Court decision, basically throwing a lot of urging Mexico to throw a lot of human rights cases out of the military court system.
Well, that's the case today. No, that's the main. Mm-hmm. That's more or less the issue of the moment in Mexico. So, yeah, for many years, all kind of international actors have been putting pressure on Mexico so as to reform the system of military jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So that cases in which military personnel are allegedly involved in violations of human rights should be prosecuted within the ordinary or civil systems of criminal justice and not within military criminal courts and tribunals.
Right.
So that has been on the international agenda for many years. But this pressure around this particular issue has intensified, or the pressure around it has intensified since 2009, like you say, mm-hmm. in the context of Calderon's strategy to fight drug cartels. So basically, right. The international pressures have grown since 2009, including a series of very important rulings by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, which, as you know, these rulings are obligatory. They are, the Mexican state has a legal obligation.
Yeah, Mexico has signed on to the 1979 Pacto de San Jose and must, they're obligated.
Exactly, they're obligated, whereas recommendations by other organs are simply that, recommendations.
Right.
But in any case, the recommendations and the rulings by the Inter-American Court have been put in motion or have contributed to some processes within Mexico that have led, in these past few days, the National Supreme Court to decide in one particular case now, but some people expect that it will decide for every case or for all kind of cases in this kind of context, that these kind of cases in which military personnel violate human rights should be tried and prosecuted through the ordinary system of penal justice. And this particular decision by the National Supreme Court has been, no doubt, influenced by all these international dynamics.
Just to back up a second, the military justice system in Mexico, which has traditionally been given all of these human rights abuse cases, what is their record on punishing these cases?
Well, the record is pretty bad. Mm-hmm. There's been particularly Human Rights Watch has been following this issue closely. They have published a couple of special reports focusing on this particular issue. And basically the finding, which everybody kind of agrees on, is that the system of military jurisdiction leads to impunity. This conclusion is even present in the annual reports of the State Department, on Mexico.
So it's impossible to get justice through the military system. And so
yeah.
What happened with the latest decision? This was the Jethro Ramsey's case you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the case I'm talking about, mm-hmm. this case. Just in the past few days, the National Supreme Court determined that this particular case has to be taken to the ordinary system of criminal justice. Now, mm-hmm. that is seen as a very important step by the Mexican and international human rights community in general,
right.
because the investigation is taken out of military oversight. Now, I hate to be kind of the aguafiestas in
the
of the fun, so to speak. But, the Mexican civil system of criminal justice doesn't work either. We have massive amounts of impunity in Mexico in either system. There's I mean, some research has come to the conclusion that only 1% of crimes in general in Mexico end up with somebody in jail. So, I mean, there are no police officers, for example, sentenced by a civil court because of torture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they could have done it, but they have not done it. So, yes, this is an important case. It's very important that the cases are taken to the ordinary system of civil justice, because at least this system is more transparent and the access for the victims and their lawyers is easier than the military system. But the challenge is still huge. I mean, the challenge to get justice in the Mexican justice system, which is completely inoperative, it's still a huge one.
Yeah, I mean, human rights defenders in Mexico who are pleased at the Jethro Rems' verdict are saying I think they agree with your critique of the civilian system and worry that this will be very hard to carry forward. The arguments I've heard for the relative superiority of the civilian system are that at least it's transparent. You can tell how the process is going, and you can attend the trials and see how the trials are going, and that at least there is a reform process underway, that there is an effort to reform the civilian system but not the military system. Is that more or less accurate?
Yeah, I think that is accurate. I mean, the chances are better, but still the challenges are huge.
Right. And then there's the other question of, will the military, I mean, this is one precedent, I guess there will be other precedents coming out from what I've read of the Supreme Court in the next several months. Will the military go along with this?
No, I think they will fight. They will fight. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't claim victory now that more precedents will be made, or more similar decisions will be made by the National Supreme Court in similar cases. Because I fear that the military is going to start exerting a lot of pressure on the ministers of the Supreme Court
and the government, directly on the judiciary.
So they're going to not going to just sit and cross their arms. I think they're going to fight for it, and we'll see how the following rulings, because the Supreme Court has 30 or some cases on the table, which are similar to the Jethro Rems case. So they have to address all those cases.
And we know that President Calderon, at least rhetorically, probably in practice too, always took strongly the side of the military and seemed to favor keeping most cases, especially of homicides, in the military system. Are we likely to expect the same from the government that's almost definitely coming with Enrique Peña Nieto and the pre-party?
Well, that's a question I couldn't answer.
Speculative, yeah.
Yeah, very speculative. But we do have some little piece of information, because during the presidential campaign, the debates about human rights were very scarce. Nobody talked a lot about human rights. But Peña Nieto did say once that he was determined to implement the rulings of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights regarding military jurisdiction.
Interesting.
But that was just a statement. And the relationship of the military with the executive power in Mexico, I don't think that it depends on the party. It's just kind of the same relationship. It's going to be a very strong dependence from one another. So I would speculate that the government is going to be also supportive of the military.
The position will be similar, yeah.
I guess.
Going back to the international dimension, I mean, the movement of cases from military to civilian jurisdiction is, of course, part of the conditions on U.S. assistance to Mexico. And it's actually indirectly led to the State Department even holding up some of the military assistance that Washington has provided under the Merida Initiative. Is that a useful tool? Is the United States playing a useful role when it weighs in on behalf of civilian justice in Mexico, or could it be doing an even better job of it?
It could be doing a better job, because it's sending mixed signals. As you mentioned, the Merida Initiative includes these conditions on human rights. One of them is the issue of military jurisdiction. So that's a signal. That's a signal that very, very concrete. But then on the other hand, the government, the U.S. government, doesn't seem to give so much importance, really, to the human rights problems that are being generated around the struggle against drug cartels, I think. My view is that they favor security over human rights. My view is that in U.S. foreign policy, security trumps human rights. So the signals they send to the Mexican government are mixed. Even if you read the State Department reports, they do include information about military jurisdiction, about violation of human rights in the struggle against against drugs. But the language is very cautious. The language is not very assertive. And basically, they don't make a critique or they don't condemn the Mexican government.
Yeah, when push comes to shove, security does come out ahead. And could you say the same thing about the United States' current policy toward securing the border and migration?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that security trumps human rights even more so at the border than elsewhere. We have seen that the emphasis, even we have seen that the U.S. emphasis on security at the border or border control has been kind of going down to Mexico and influencing Mexican policy making. And we are implementing very harsh migration policies in Mexico, trying to stop the flow of people from Central America through Mexico. And in that case, security is also trumping human rights, even if the discourse is, at least in Mexico, the discourse is very mindful of human rights. So they always say that human rights will be very much an important concern. But then in practice, that doesn't seem that right. clear.
Well, mixed messages and security trumping human rights concerns are unfortunately old themes we've dealt with in our work on U.S. policy toward Latin America. And anything else you'd like to add from your work currently on the international relations dimension of human rights?
No, I think that basically international actors should maintain their pressure on Mexico. I think U.S.-based organizations like WOLA, of course, like Human Rights Watch, Due Process of Law Foundation, and so on. There's a huge list of U.S. institutions, civil society institutions that are doing a great job. I think they should continue to do it because their work is very relevant. And as I said at the beginning, their contribution is very important in terms of defining an institutional and legal setting which is more favorable to the promotion and defense of human rights in Mexico. You guys make the work of Mexican activists easier.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say, but also thank you, Alejandro, for joining me today. Alejandro Anaya from CIDE, I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
And that's it for now. Thank you for listening to WOLA's Latin America Today. Please keep listening. We're up on iTunes, where if you have a moment to write a review, we'd really appreciate the feedback, and it would help us a lot to reach new listeners. Meanwhile, please keep visiting WOLA's website, www.wola.org. If you're finding these podcasts useful, please do consider making a donation while you're there to keep us going. You can also find WOLA on Facebook or on Twitter at WOLA_ORG. Hasta pronto.